You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Do you know Kevin Kincaid from Crossing Broad?
I do not know him, no.
Yeah, he's just some...
Well, I know who he is.
Kevin Kincaid. I don't even know who that is. Anyway.
It's always soccer in Philadelphia once again, everybody. I'm your host, Kevin Kincaid, joined by my main man, who, sir, smoke a lot.
What's going on, Kev?
It's Kareeth Gabriel back with us. What's good, man? How you been?
Yeah, I've been great. You know, staying busy over at the Inquirer. Loving the fact that my man John Tannenwald is holding it down for us in New Zealand right now, and doing whatever's left to kind of keep the soccer excitement alive. It's been a fun time to be a part of that team and see what's going on here in the city when it comes to soccer.
Yeah, you deputize him for JT while he's out there. You were down at Subaru for the first League's Cup game.
Yeah, I was down there for the first League's Cup game against Tijuana. Honestly, it was just we needed help. We had our one of our intern writers for the summer. She's phenomenal. This woman named Sapna Bansal. She actually was there covering the game and did a phenomenal job at it. And I was just kind of there to make sure if she had any questions to be answered. And honestly, I got a free game out of it, you know what I mean? It's good to be up in the press box and see some of those guys and stuff like that. But, whatever soccer related, I'm holding it down until my man JT gets back. So,
is it weird for you to go back down and sit in that press box after working for the team? Were you my boss? You weren't really my boss, right? You were just my
editor. I wasn't. I've never been in all of these management positions I've had. I've never been anyone's boss. So, no, I wasn't your boss. But
I was just a freelancer, right? I wasn't a full-time employee. So.
Yeah, we worked alongside each other to create content for the union. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know what? I wouldn't say it was surreal. It's just a lot of, new faces, right? And so for me, I'm used to walking in and used to seeing, like your mug and, Tannenwald and a lot of different guys who I've seen in the past.
Yeah.
And it was none of those. Oh, well, I saw Joe Tanzi and it was great to sketch up with Joe.
Tanzi's always there. Yeah, was DeGeorge there? I think he was in Japan.
No,
covering
Not DeGeorge, was covering swimming in Japan or something.
Everybody's in Asia. All of the union mainstays are in Asia for whatever.
I know. Listen, man, get on it, man. Anytime you can get the Dugo Times to send you anywhere, you gotta count your stars. Hey,
Crossing Broad ain't sending me anywhere other than Atlantic City, I want to say. I think that was the one worldwide meeting where the big wigs from the UK came over and they're like, "We're meeting in Atlantic City."
That's crazy. Well,
that's like a running joke. I'm like, please, whatever you do, please send us. I've done two company wide meetings where the people from London come over. And one was in Red Bank, New Jersey, and the other one was Atlantic City. I'm like, please just make the next one not in New Jersey. I will go anywhere other than New Jersey.
Yeah. When I was at PW, I'll never forget, we held our company all-staff meeting at Trump National Golf Course. And it was probably one of the most surreal experiences I've ever had in my entire life. It was a two-day event, too. So I had to go back for the second day at Trump National. And talking about sticking out like a sore thumb.
Well, Kareeth is an OG, man. I mean, Kareeth was at the Daily News back in the day when the union started, and then he was running digital for PhiladelphiaUnion.com. So you've seen a lot of union soccer, you've seen a lot of different stuff, some crazy shit over the years. You've seen Open Cup, you've seen that dust storm, though.
Dust storm was crazy.
Yeah, you've seen weather delays, you've seen all kinds of stuff. This is new. The League's Cup is new. I will say this. I was very skeptical of the tournament going into it because I'm like, this is just a money thing. MLS, Liga MX wants the money. MLS wants the money. They want to combine forces. They want to do this big showcase. That's fine. I get it. I didn't really give a shit because I thought the tournament was unbalanced. I'm like, the union are going to get, four straight home games here to start or whatever.
Yeah.
I watched them beat Tijuana 3-1. I watched them beat Querétaro 5-1. I was like, well, I'm entertained. This has been entertaining. I mean, so I don't know. I'm trying to watch it with an open mind and try to stay interested.
Not for nothing, man. Like I said, even to be there, like live watching it, to watch those guys. I mean, they played that game as hard as they play any like league game. You know what I mean? So I mean, no one was dogging it. It wasn't like Jim was putting in, you know, like Union 2 players. Like they want to win this thing. So, you know, I think with that, it brings along a rooting interest for sure. But, you know, I did agree with you initially. Like, I just thought, oh, here we go, another tournament, another money grab in the summer of money grabs, if you're looking at all of the soccer that's, like, going on right now.
All the shit that they've made up every summer that we've been doing is the International Champions Cup.
What was it called? The World Football Challenge?
The World Football Challenge.
I mean, you talk about money grabs, bro. It was crazy. But, no, the League's Cup actually feels – legit. I've always honestly wanted to see how some of these MLS teams do against Liga MX teams. Because, you know, there's always that, like, back and forth about, like, which league is the best, you know, the historic Mexican league or, you know, MLS that has, you know, just pumped out, you know, some really good expansion teams year after year. So, I don't know. I have a rooting interest just to see, like, honestly, like, which one's better. But to me, it's, you know, it just seems like a lot. I was talking to Tansy about this. That Tijuana game, Union had already played 36 matches.
Is that insane, man?
Yeah. That's insane. I mean, we're talking about, we're not even close to October yet. And they've played close to 40 matches so far. So, you know, I don't even know how these guys can put up with the, you know, with doing this game in and game out. It's just so much. It's just, you know, and credit to the coaching staff figuring out how to rotate these players because, I mean, that's just a lot. That's just a lot of soccer, you know, so soon. And we're talking about July, too. Guys are traveling. It's hot as shit. Like, it just seems very intense for almost, like, no reason. But, no, to your point, it's been very entertaining to watch, and I've been watching them, so.
Because people say the same thing. Like, me and DeGeorge are the same. Me and DeGeorge kind of came from that, like, snarky, kind of sardonic, kind of, you know, with the pithy jokes and stuff like that. And people think I'm some crank, like I'm some curmudgeon who hates fun or whatever. I'm like, no, I'm watching the games and I'm enjoying them and I want them to progress in this tournament. I mean, shit, you get a Champions League berth if you win the whole thing. I mean, you get a trophy. Like, I'm not going to see, because my thing is, like, I came into this year saying, like, I think that they need to win another trophy. I want this team. I want this era of Union Soccer, the best era in team history, to end with another trophy. Just so we can look back and say they did something other than the COVID shield, right? And again, that's not me disparaging the trophy that they won the first time. I think the supporter shield that they won during the pandemic was an achievement. I just think it was a different kind of achievement. And that's the way that I look at the League's Cup here. I don't put a lot of stock. I hate that it's like all the games are played here, right? But you can only play the teams that are in front of you. You can only play under the circumstances. I mean, this is what MLS and Liga MX gave you. So they're going to put you out there. You play what's in front of you. And if you win it, you win it. I'm not going to poo-poo it, but I will put asterisks on it. I don't think it's unfair to add those caveats to it, you know, because not a single game is going to be played in Mexico. Imagine if we did a League's Cup where the Union had to play every single game in Mexico.
Yeah, no, it would be intense. You're right. I think from a regard, like it is their thing, and their thing being the league, and you know they want to pump it up and show it off. And like I said, it does give you a berth in the conference. I was the same as you, man. I really thought that, like, here we go again with some other cup that's just, you know, on top of more cups. Because, I mean, think about it. You're playing Open Cup. You're playing League's Cup. You're playing Champions League. You're playing the season. Yeah. Like, at what point do you guys get to take a breather and just say, like, this is too much, right? But,
Or do you say, like, does anybody give a shit about the actual league anymore? Because you're throwing a million things at them, you know?
But I mean, I guess the same could be said though for European soccer. I mean, look at how many tournaments those guys are in over the course of you know, August to whenever it ends, May, season. So I mean, I get it. I think the League's Cup has shown more merit and more value because the game has been really good. The games for the Union have been really good anyway. And you know, it's been, the league has been pumping it up. So obviously they're pumping a ton of marketing dollars into it. You know, the website for it's great. You can find any kind of stat that you need. And, you know, me selfishly as a media guy, like I'm interested in that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's definitely an interest in it because the Union are doing so well, but it is definitely one of those tournaments where it's like, you know, it just feels like one of many. over the course
one of many. But here's the thing.
Very long season.
You know what it reminds me of, man? Because you were sitting there with me in 2014 and, you know, 2015 or whenever the hell, right? And we watched like the Union get to the Open Cup final two times in a row. And, you know, that first year, maybe you remember better than I do, but they played
Seattle, wasn't it?
They played Seattle, but in the lead up to it, they only played one road game, I think.
Oh, that's
played,
right.
They played FC Dallas on the road in the semis, and they beat them on penalties. And I remember that was huge at the time. But I think the first three games that they played at the Open Cup were at home. So, yeah, they would have won a trophy, and it would have meant something. But you could have looked back and said, well, they won four home games.
Yeah.
So I honestly, the Leagues Cup feels a lot like the U.S. Open Cup to me. Only you're replacing the USL, you're replacing like the Rochester Rhinos and the Harrisburg, whatever the fuck they're called now, the City Islanders, Penn FC or whatever they are, where they change their name to. But you know what I'm saying? Like it's almost like it's the same kind of thing where you get like the MLS home teams are going to be favored a lot, but you're just swapping out the.
I think there's more weight just because you're playing League MX though. I mean, like FCT or Tijuana was. Tijuana was a joke. I'm sorry. Like they just were not a good team. It was obvious. It was evident. But I mean, it still brought some star power. I mean, you had, you know, Herrera coaching the team, which for me, I was enamored by that. I'm like, holy crap, like the Mexican national team coach is coaching Club Tijuana. Let me go ahead and watch this real quick. You know what I mean? So I think there was intrigue enough both in that game and the game against Querétaro where I thought like okay, like if they're really going to go after this and they're going to put forth, you know, their best 11, it's worth rooting for and I guess getting into. But I don't know. I Open Cup's always been different for me because I've been around soccer for as long as I have. That tournament matters more because I think it's like it really is the domestic version of the FA Cup for me.
It's got history too.
It's got so much like great history to it.
Yeah.
You know, some of the players in it have just been like, you know, like legendary. So. You know, it's Leagues Cup isn't there for me at all, but it's intriguing because of who we're playing and just the rivalry now of U.S. Mexico has gone club, which I think is interesting.
I think people are learning too that there are shitty teams in League MX because our exposure I would reckon that the average MLS fan or the average Union fan probably doesn't watch a lot of Mexican soccer outside of the Champions League, so they're used to seeing Tigres and Club America and León and all these bangers just, you know, just throttle MLS teams or, you know, more so in the past than in the present. But like, like some of these teams are shit, you know?
Tijuana was trash, bro. Tijuana was not a good team. Like, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and be a dead horse, but like, the Union had no business even letting them score. They had one player who was making smart diagonal runs, but Tijuana couldn't even get him the ball. And the one time he did score was off like a ridiculous, like, you know, just like crazy play in the box. So, you know, it was evident that like when you do watch Mexican League club soccer, you're only seeing, like the top three, top four teams. And everyone beneath there is definitely a lot of parity.
Not everybody is Monterey, you know.
It's
interesting to watch. I don't know if the average like Union fan, the average MLS fan really like, you know, had a grasp of that. But the Union are through. They're in the round of 32 and they play DC United at home. And then they get the Red Bull NYC winner at home if they win that. And then they would play then the other quadrant. Is that the word I'm looking for? The other quadrant of that bracket is
Pod, I guess.
Pumas, Querétaro, Atlas and New England Revolution. I honestly would love to see them win two games and play Atlas again because those champions. Did you watch those Champions League games earlier in the season?
I did. Yeah, they were good.
They were evenly matched, man. I wouldn't mind seeing round three of Union and Atlas. But if I had to guess, my guess is that my official prediction for the show is that the Union play Pumas in the round of. What would that be? The round of eight, I believe. Yeah. It's interesting. But like you said, man, I'm glad they're going for it because it's like, what else are you going to do anyway? You know, sit here for 4 weeks and dick around and just train.
There's no reason for Jim and company to not go after that tournament as hard as possible for the implications, for the incentives. I mean, obviously there's whenever you add a cup to something, there's money right involved. These guys will, you know, are all playing for that too. So there's just a lot of reasons why you don't poo-poo this one. And, you know, I think the lineup that he brought out in the first game, you know, show that, like, yeah, we're going after this. We're going to, you know, we're going to play Gazdag. We're going to play, you know, a lot of players at Carranza. Yeah. Like, we're going to play guys who, you know, who will help us go after this game and secure a win. And I think that speaks volumes to, you know, to them not poo-pooing this Leagues Cup, which, you know, honestly, if it's a free pass into the Champions League, like, why would you not go after something like that? So,
did you go down to the Wrexham game?
Nah, bro.
No. Yeah. Did you watch the series?
I watched a little bit of the series. Yeah. Yeah, I saw them get. Did they play Arsenal? I think it was. And I saw them get.
They played Man United on the.
It was Man United. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like the third. That was rough. And honestly, when I found out that, like, they were playing Union 2, I was gonna go, but ended up having to work back at home for something else. So I did end up going. It just felt like, and I talked to one of our editors about this, it just felt like one of those games where it's like, hey, we're bringing this team to America to promote the second season of this documentary that has taken the world by storm. Like, it didn't feel like anything that was, like, worth going. I mean, cool, like, here's this random team from England that came out of nowhere. I'm sorry, from Wales that came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, you know, they're like, the, you know, I just didn't care enough. And clearly the Union didn't either, by proxy of putting out their you know, their USL2 team.
They kind of had to with the Leagues Cup thing being,
yeah,
you know, overlapping, you know, so.
But I will say this, though. I appreciate Rob McElhenney, you know, making sure that a game was played here in Philly, right? Because he could have gone after, you know, he could have ridden the wave of all of the hype and played as many big clubs as he could. And he chose to say, no, I want to play a game in my hometown.
Yeah.
Have my hometown.
And they kept their commitment because they were supposed to play here 2 years ago, you know. And
2 years ago.
Because of the pandemic. They could have said, fuck it, we're going, you know, going to go just play the Galaxy or something like that. So, yeah, it was good. Did you catch on to this? Like, I don't know how much you're aware of, like, MLS Twitter arguing or whatever, but there was, like, this kind of fake narrative, like, dumb storyline going around. Like, they were saying, well, you know, people are going to wake up at 8 in the morning on Saturday to watch fifth tier Wrexham, you know, on ESPN, or ESPN will put on, like, fifth tier, you know, English, you know, British soccer, but nobody gives a shit about the Philadelphia Union. I was, like, annoyed by that because I'm like, I don't think that, like, it's like unique scenario, man. I mean, as you're talking about two Hollywood superstars who, like, made a crazy investment in this is not your typical story, man. I mean, like, I don't even know how you compare those two things, you know?
It's not. I mean, this is, and don't get me wrong, I think only when I said that, like, you know, they're totting around. I mean, I believe all of that. I believe, like, this was a chance to promote the team and promote the second season of the documentary. Like, it did that to a T. But what Wrexham did, nothing short of, like, pretty fucking remarkable, you know what I mean? And for these two guys to, you know, throw their names in the ring, become owners of this team, you know, provide it with the resources that it needed to move up, that's awesome. Now, do you parade that around the U.S. for the entire summer? I mean, why? But you do if you're promoting a fucking documentary, bro. I mean, I don't know. I think for me, it's just like, I you know, Kevin, you know me, I'm a purist, man. Like, I don't ride with the hype, and Wrexham just feels like hype to me.
Yeah.
But I can't knock the fact that what these guys did was pretty incredible. And
yeah,
the fact that, you know, Rob and Ryan put their heads together and said, no, we're going to help this random team, you know, do big things. That's awesome. And I think that, you know, having American influence in European soccer at any level is fantastic, especially from an ownership level, which is great.
So, you know what my stance has always been on these things. Like, I just find it kind of corny that people who have, like, never been, you know, to England would pick some English team and be like, I'm Chelsea till I die.
Yeah.
Motherfucker, you never even left New Jersey, you know? But I try to, like, as I get older, I try to back off of it a little bit more and be like, look, man, if this is, like, if somebody watched the Wrexham documentary just because it was, like, interesting, or they knew Ryan Reynolds or Rob McElhenney or something like that, and it was, and they were, like, intrigued, and they said, oh, I kind of like this story, I like this sport, like, and they got into soccer that way, I got no problem with that. I asked Jim this question. We talked about this for a little bit the last time he was on. But if you gave me the option hypothetically of like, would I rather have like a Euro snob who likes soccer but won't watch the Union versus some like 4-for-4 dude who hates all soccer in general? Like, I'm going to take the Premier League. I'm going to take the Arsenal fan who wakes up at 7 o'clock and go to misconduct. So if people got into soccer watching Wrexham, that's cool. I just find it like kind of corny if you're waving your scarf around and being like, yeah, I'm Wrexham forever, you know?
So. Yeah, I think it's and I hear what you're saying, and I kind of ride with it. I'm old school, man. Like, so I always tell the story because it's so true. Like there wasn't your pick of the litter for soccer teams when you and I were, you know, coming out and watching soccer. I remember
we didn't have anything. We had no pick. Yeah.
Well, remember ESPN would only show two teams. It would only show Man United and whatever the fuck they were playing.
Yeah.
Or they'd show Chelsea and whatever the fuck Chelsea was playing. So you'd have to pick between. I'm a Man U fan because I started watching these guys in, you know, 96, 97 when they were hot. 99, they won the fucking treble. And I'm like, oh my God, this is my squad, right? So I kind of equate that to now where, like, if you were just a passerby, you try to watch them, Welcome to Wrexham, you fall in love with this team and they're making a U.S. tour. Yeah, you're going to ride with them because it's like the first thing that you saw that made you like enamored with soccer, right?
Yeah.
So I don't knock that as much. I'm all for fandom of the sport. So however you weave your way into it, it's great.
Yeah, you and me the same with that, man. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't like other people who like can't kick a soccer ball, but want to tell you everything like there is to know about soccer. It's like, come on, bro. Like, I don't have to like have you know what I mean? Like, or don't tell me that, you know, I used to play high school JV and now I'm a pro and I can tell you every single position and why you should run the guys. Like, get the fuck out of my face with that bullshit, bro. Like, but you want to, you know what I'm saying? Like, that. Those are the fans that I can't ride with. But you want to talk to me about soccer all day and you have a carnal knowledge of the sport because you played it or you watch it, you understand it, or you kind of mastered it in that way. Let's talk all day. But you can tell the fans who are like that, fans who are like, I randomly talk to, you know, Corey Ferlin is a really good friend of mine. He was, Sons of Ben originator. And
he's been on the show a bunch. Yeah.
He's the man. He will call me randomly and like, we'll just talk soccer. And it's always a really good conversation because not only does he know the sport, but the man's played on a pretty high level. You know what I mean? So that's the kind of fan that you can kind of ride with as opposed to the ones who, you know, can't kick a soccer ball into a goal.
No, it's posers, man. You know, I'm not going to name names or anything, but there are some people in the, not in the local media, but in the national media, who should just stick to doing the interviewing and doing the quotes and stuff like that, and not necessarily try to tell us anything about the tactical side of the game. You know what I mean? I'm not saying I'm the second coming of like Ben Olsen from Mechanicsburg or wherever the hell he's from, but like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, there's a clear, I think the players look at the people in the media and they look at fans too. And they say like, all right, like I can, you know, you can kind of,
divide, oh, they know.
You can tell, you can they tell. Know. They know who's legit and who's not.
Totally.
Totally. There's layers to the game, you know, because it's funny when the football coaches talk to the media and they're like, well, you never played. Well, I mean, like other media looks at other media and fans look at other fans and say, okay, I know, like,
right.
who did it and who didn't, you know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah. And it's so obvious. I mean, being on both sides, you know, now being back in on the media side, but obviously working the PR side and being around players.
Yeah.
It was pretty evident who they would prefer to talk to and who really just kind of got on their nerves, right? And it was usually the guys who you do, like, you know, I'm just going to call them. They were just like nerds, you know, and they were good at what they did. They were good at, you know, studying and doing the homework and doing the research. But when it came down to having a carnal knowledge of the game and being tactically aware, it wasn't there. Like, sure, you watch a video and picked up something up and came to a press conference with that, but you didn't really know what you're what you're seeing. So there's a lot of that, I think, you know, from both a fan side and you're right, and a media side that, you know, some guys ride with and some guys don't.
You had good conversations, or did you have like regular conversation with the players back when you were working for the team of like, you know, hey, I prefer to talk to this person, or I want to talk about this, or like I'm wary of doing this or not that. Like how media and fan like aware were they?
Yeah, no, I think that there were, so a lot, you'd be surprised at the guys who read almost everything and the guys who could care less, right? Like, I'll give you an example. And this is going way back, but Danny Califf read everything, right? Mm-hmm. And Danny Califf knew that, like, and I guess because being the captain, he always wanted to be in the know, but There were certain guys he didn't want to talk to, and certain guys that if you said, hey, this guy was coming to talk to you, sure, you know, let him in. I'm trying to think who else the same way.
There was a bunch of them, but here was the trigger, man. It was like the tell is when somebody comes up to you and says, I don't read anything.
Right.
That means I read every single fucking thing.
I read every single thing that you wrote. Coaches too. Hackworth would pull that bullshit. And I'm like, Hack, you know you read that story. That's why you don't want to talk to this guy. You know what I mean? So like,
because I would see Hack and he'd be like, hey, that was a good story you wrote the other day. Right. I'd be like, I thought you didn't read anything.
I didn't read anything. Exactly. So it's so true. But it's, you know, yes, I would say that there were definitely guys who preferred certain media members over others. You know, and looking back at it now, I think it just came down to a respect thing, you know, a lot of these guys. So
yeah, I do remember, I'm not going to name names, but I do remember a story where there was a group of guys who refused to talk to somebody in the locker room because they just thought that person was being too critical of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily that they, at least from my understanding, it wasn't necessarily that they disputed this person's knowledge of the game or anything like that, but they just thought they were getting like a unfair shake from this person, right? So they were like, we're not going to talk to this person anymore, you know? And that's I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often. I'm sure the players are thinking it, you know, in a lot of ways they're required to do it, but when we had those old school locker rooms, you know, they don't do locker room anymore.
No, they don't. It's all mixed in now.
It's all mixed. Well, yeah, you were there not long ago, but
it's, you know what, it's a different group. But that's one thing that I noticed with this group, because, you know, I talked to Andre the other night, and I talked to a Carranza, and these guys are like, I mean, you know, Blake's old school, but like Carranza's like super affable guy, you know what I mean? Like he was willing to talk.
They're just regular dudes. They're just regular dudes.
And I think that, like, you know, when you don't come into this with an ego, or any kind of, like, you know, heightened sense of awareness, it makes the conversation better. So it's up to the media member to also realize that too, and to engage with that person in the right way to get, obviously, one, the story that you want, and two, not to come off like a pompous asshole. I mean, it just comes down to
everybody's always like skeptical. Everybody looks at the media and their first thought is like, what does this person want from me? I'm like, bro, like when I ask like how your family's doing, like I seriously am just asking you how your family's doing. I'm not trying to get some fucking like story out of you. It's just like, hey, what's up, man? I haven't seen you in a while. You know, so you know, but it's hard for you gotta drop your guard and you gotta get to know these guys. Like I can never do that with I could go off on a crazy tangent about the Sixers shit, but like, how am I ever going to like get breakthrough with Ben Simmons? You know, I can't even get close to the guy, you know? And he's like riding around in a Ferrari and dating a Kardashian anyway. You know, like, do you think Ray Gattis doing that for the Philadelphia? No.
No, he was not. And that's the difference, I think, between this team and a lot of the other major sports teams in the city. You mentioned it, is the accessibility to these guys. And once you do have the access, you know, they are willing to talk. They're willing to talk about, you know, pain points in the game or you know, what they like and what they enjoy. And that's super helpful and makes it easy for you to do your job. Or, you know, some other beats, it isn't that easy, and everything is a grind and everything is a push pull in terms of getting information. I would say the media with the union, unfortunately, like, they don't really have that problem. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So they got in between now and the last podcast that I did, they extended Ernst.
Yeah,
so we got that deal done. You said you had stuff to say about Ernst and Jim's extensions.
I think that they're both good calls. I think that, and I can't speak for Jim's, extension. I think that it's well deserved, and I'm super happy he's here. I mean, like, that was going to happen anyway. I know that obviously he was being eyed for some other jobs, but I think always, you know, it was his goal to remain in Philadelphia. You know, he's got young kids who are in school here. And uproot that life to, you know, perhaps go to Europe or perhaps go to Chicago to be with the national team. Just didn't seem like Jim, honestly. So I wasn't surprised by him getting an extension, and I'm glad he's staying. He's been by far the best manager that the team has had, that the club's had since in its inception. And I would argue that point with anyone.
Do you realize that, like, discounting Connie Mack, Jim has like the second longest tenured coach
in
Philadelphia since like 1950. That's insane. I can't believe that nobody had a longer. I mean, Andy Reid was Andy Reid, right? So he's probably never going to be topped. But Shiro, Billy Cunningham, none of those guys were here as long as
no
Jim. I think he passed them this year.
And the crazy thing about Jim is that Jim worked his way up from the bottom. I mean, he literally is like, you know, started from the bottom. Now I'm here. I mean, he was the academy assistant, then the academy head coach, assistant with the U, and now he's the head coach. He's been head coach now for like what, 5-6 years, and it's been great to see, because his progression truly is speaks to his level of, you know, like determination to this club and like love for it. So, you know, more power to him. What I'm talking about, though, is with Ernst is, you know, I think that the Ernst thing was an 11th hour move. You know, I was someone, and I never wrote this, but someone brought to my attention that Ernst was actually taking interviews with the club in Germany. Hmm. And but whether or not that, you know, forced the union's hand or not, you know, or even being a rumor, it definitely is one of those things that I think, you know, definitely makes them, you know, raise an eyebrow. I mean, we had confirmation that he made that trip. You know, what it was for, it was hard to get, but, you know, and all outward appearances from off the record conversations that I had had, like, it was in it, you know? So I think that those two put together, you know, have had the most success over the years. I mean, you could argue that they had some success with Ernie this year, but I think that Ernst is definitely, you know, surpassed Ernie's level of success with the club. And yeah. I think it's great to continue what those two are looking to do. You know,
Stewart tenure was? The Ernie Stewart tenure was him coming in and saying, whoa, these guys don't have shit. Yeah. Like, let me set a foundation here and, like, let's act like a real team, you know, and like just button it up and do what we're supposed to do. And he turned them into a legit professional organization. Mm-hmm. Some of his signings left something to be desired, but he was like a bridge almost between the two eras.
Totally. Because if you think about it, like, yeah, there was a lot. I mean, you know, this like their budget was a joke, and what they were able to do with the money that like they had, people kind of forget too, right? So now that you do have more of a cash infusion, you have, you know, minority owners stepping in and throwing their names into the pot, like it's been able to really spur, you know, a product that everyone wants to come and see. You know, it's, I'll put it this way, the marketing team doesn't have to work as hard as he did back in the day when I was there to kind of keep stuff, you know, going with this club.
Yeah,
you haven't had to shine the shit per se to make it go, and I think like that's a huge testament to your point for Ernie to bridge the gap, but to Ernst bringing in the right guys and Jim, you know, doing the homework and, you know, and putting a staff on him that can bring in the guys to. Yeah. I mean honestly, where did Daniel Gazdag come from? Like who would have thought? Let me go grab this like Hungarian guy real quick who's gonna come in and tear it up, you know? You know
like Kai Wagner. Kai Wagner signing.
Remember when people were ripping the Carranza deal? They're like, Inter Miami, why are you bringing this guy in?
I was not excited about that. I'm like, okay, we're taking on somebody else's trash. We're gonna buy low on a reclamation project, you know.
Everyone thought that.
Here's the thing, man. You bring Jim back, you bring Ernst back.
Yeah.
Does it matter if Jay is not going to spend more money because are they not still playing money ball and still relying on Ernst, like unearthing these ridiculous diamonds in the rough to be competitive? Like if he's ever going to open the pocketbook, I don't know if he ever will, but like, I mean, the time is now.
You know? I think Ernst now has the cash now to go and say, listen, I want player X. We need player X. He's going to be the guy that's going to be a game changer for us. Mm-hmm. And that maybe forces the hand a little bit. And again, we're not talking about single entity ownership anymore. I mean, you have other dollars throwing their hands into the pot to help out, you know, Sugarman here. So, you know, I think it's a situation where if the move is right and it obviously, well, for the union comes at value, but even if it doesn't come at value, if it's a guy that they know will help them win championships, I find it real hard in this second stint now with Ernst and obviously Jim being Jim and, you know, being for the long haul, them not getting what they want. I don't think he needs to. He's proven now that, yeah, I can go out and find you the diamond in the rough. So let me get this bona fide player real quick so we can take this to the next level. And I find it real hard in this new era of the union for Sugarman to be like, nah, I can't ride with that.
He can't have any. There can be no inhibition. There is nothing more to prove. Like, they played Moneyball and they've gotten, they won a trophy and they've gotten closer to more trophies.
Yeah, they were a penny kick away from being champions playing Moneyball, right?
They were like Gareth Bale friggin' bullshit goal, last minute goal, right, from winning it all, you know? So, exactly. so some people look at it and say, like, well, it's proof that our cheap methods are working. We don't have to do anything. And then other people would look at it, a pragmatist would look at it and say, hey, we're right the fuck there. Like, that little bit of investment, like, puts us over the top. You know what I'm saying? So I love the gym extension. Honest to God, man, like, it's his family.
Yeah.
That's why he doesn't want to go anywhere. He's had offers to go overseas, but he's got young kids, man. He's always like in Sea Isle on Instagram. And like, he grew up here and he lives. It's like, you got job security. I don't, like, what are you going to up and move your like three kids to wherever the fuck Queens Park Rangers is, West London or something?
You know? Yeah. And it's not even a big fish, small pond kind of a thing. Like you're right. Like, he's from here. Like, you know what I mean? He's established. Yeah. Family's established. He's a winner here. Like, I don't know. I don't know too many people who would give that up. You know what I mean? Obviously, yes, you want to go bigger and better and test your mettle. But you don't do that when you're, you know, a 40-something father of like three or two or whatever he's got.
No, no.
Like,
he goes over there. He's got no guarantee of anything.
No guarantee.
They have a poor start. He gets sacked. And then he's like, what, moving his family back over here to be the, I don't know, like.
Right.
To coach where? To coach the Chicago Fire? I don't know. It's like.
Yeah. No.
I wouldn't put my family through that, you know?
No, I wouldn't either. And I think it's a smart move because obviously this is a coach that, you know, I think what like really works with Jim is he is as pissed as the fans are when the team sucks, and he is as excited as the fans are when the team's doing well.
Yeah,
and that just plays well here, right? Like, he wants to win, and he's working with the club to you know assemble an 11 that can go out and do that. I think though that there will be a window where the proof will be in the pudding, and you're going to have the restless natives again if he's not winning, you know, being like, all right, well, was this a good move? Was this a good deal? But I think for now, like, there's not much that you can kind of hang your hat on. I mean, he's proven that, like you said before, even with playing Moneyball, I can bring in guys that'll get us to where we need to be.
Two quick items here, and then we'll end on a union thought exercise. Cool. Number one, they loaned Andres Perea to New York City FC. I'm staring at my notes here and I didn't write anything down beyond
on Tuesday. Yep.
$300,000 in GAM or something like that. Obviously there's much more to the story because he was an acquisition in the off season. He played a lot at the beginning of the year and then he disappeared off the face of the earth. Like, a Peter Novak guy who ended up in the doghouse, you know, like he disappeared, like Porfirio Lopez just disappeared. You know what I mean? So obviously there's something more to
that. Juan Diego Gonzalez.
Oh my God. Juan Diego Gonzalez. Chacho. Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Some great names from back in the day, man.
Yeah. Throwback Jones right there.
So there's something more to that. I have no idea what the more is. If I was still on the beat, I would sniff it out, but now I'm
That was one that I saw that I really just saw as a transaction too, because I didn't know much about it. I do think that treating a guy in your own division says a lot. I think that they just loaned him.
Yeah.
You loaned a guy in your division says a lot. You either think, one, you know, we don't really fear this guy, or two, he's not going to get playing time there anyway, so it's all good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think NYC. Yeah.
No, and we get $300,000 cash out of it, so it's a good deal to us. I don't really know much about it.
To get something for, do you get $300,000 just for a loan? And they've loaned Brandon Craig for like $100,000 too, so they get $400,000 just in loaning dudes that they're going to get back, and like, go develop, you develop our player.
Cool.
So like, great moves, man. Those are great moves.
It's a great move, yeah, and I think it's definitely what needed to be done. As opposed, you know, you want to have another disgruntled guy on the bench, or a guy who's just merely a practice player that like you're paying, or have someone else pay for, basically. So, it's not a bad deal.
They item number two is they're reportedly close to signing Ty Baribo. Striker, not Haribo. That's, they make the gummy bears, I think. Haribo, which
is delicious, by the way. Yeah, have you ever had the sour Haribos? They're delicious.
Oh no, they're the truth.
Yeah, they are, man. The sour are delicious.
Better than what I'm having now. I have a Bud Light lemonade strawberry. You ever seen one of these things? I didn't even know
that. I've never seen one of those. But you know what you could do? You could probably drop a couple of those sour Haribos in a glass.
Sour Haribos.
And yeah. Go to town, yeah.
Yeah.
But no,
these are just the regular Bud Light cans, not the Dylan Mulvaney ones, though. Just, you know, we wouldn't want to anger anybody, you know?
Yeah, you know what? I remember watching that and being like, is this what we're really upset about? Like is this really a thing that we're pulling out M16s and blasting, you know, cases for what?
Kid Rock is like shooting up using his machine gun. I don't fucking know. I'm a moderate. I'm like, I'm just looking at all this. I'm like, this is the dumbest shit I've ever seen. Like,
I don't get it, man. I don't understand when. I was saying this to someone literally the other day. I was like, I don't get when we all just became like just like weird, man, about stuff like that. Like, it's just like, who cares?
It's all the Twitter bullshit too, man, where everybody wants to yell at each other. 99.99999% of daily interactions in the United States are like, oh, what up, dude? You know?
Yeah.
Or let me hold the door for you, Wawa. And then we like amplify some, I don't know, Bud Light.
Yeah, and then those same two dudes are actually going to town on X, the platform formerly known as Twitter.
X.
You know, a few hours later over God knows what, because some bot got him started. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man.
By the way, you can follow Kareeth on X.
Follow me on X.
Please. It's at can't even fucking say it with a straight face.
Elon
it's Musk at Sports Writer, SPRTSW TR.
Yeah, yeah. It's Sports Writer without any of the vowels.
Follow Kareeth on X. But yes, this guy, I digress. This guy, Ty Baribo, 25 years old from Israel. He started with Maccabi Petah Tikva, scored 23 goals in 96 appearances. Then he moved to Wolfsburger AC in the Austrian League, not Wolfsburg in Germany, but Wolfsburger in Austria. He scored 28 goals in 62 appearances. He debuted for Israel, the senior team, in 2022. He's got 8 appearances and 3 goals. So it looks like this guy can score some goals. I was saying on this podcast, the last like 10 of them that we've done, like, just please go get they need another striker, because losing Corey Burke was a huge deal. So this guy looks legit. My only concern is that like the Austrian league kind of sucks ass. I watched Corey Burke score the worst hat trick on the planet. Against like a lower division Austrian team, so I hope he ends up being pretty good. But you know, in Ernst we trust, you know.
Yeah, no, and Ernst we trust. And again, I'm not a guy I know nothing about, but you know, I could have said the same thing for Julian Carranza, the same thing for Daniel Gazdag, and those guys have come in and lit up the league, right? So yeah.
Jesus Bueno, who's turned a corner, you know, it's like
right. So it's a situation of like I think you know. A guy comes here, he gets comfortable with the team, gets comfortable with the club, realizes that, yes, I can hang with these guys, and lights it up, you know, or he doesn't, and you loan him out for $300,000, you know, something like that. So,
yeah. All right. Final thing tonight, we'll end on an exercise, because we always like to do an exercise on the program. I did a story for Crossing Broad, because I can fucking do whatever I want for Crossing Broad and put Union stuff on there whenever I want. Okay. I had this thought. I'm like, you know, if you took every, because this is the best team. Look, I combined 22 and 2023 because it's the same starting 11 more.
Yeah, right? Yeah, basically, is right.
They ran it back with the team. They play some 3-5-2 now, but you get the point. So I was like, you know, if you took like the best, if you put a best 11 together of dudes from 2010 to 2021 and had them play against this team, would they beat this team? And I was like, I don't know, man. I went through the whole process and like, So I went with the diamond for the new guys: Ua, Carranza, Gajdog, Flock, Bedoya, Martinez, Wagner, Elliott, Gillespie, and Baezo Blake. And then I put together here's the thing: I didn't want people to get hung up on like the formation and the shape that I chose for the old school team, because I just tried to fit the best 11 dudes.
Yeah,
on the field, right. So this is what I came up with: Freed Mondragon in goal, Austin Trusty, left center back; Carlos Valdez, center back; Mark McKenzie, right center back. I got a double pivot at D-mid with Marisa Du and Vince Noguera.
Oh,
then I have a crazy midfield line of 4 of Brendan Aronson, Tranquillo Barneta, Boric Doshkal, and El Sino. And then I got Latu up top. Do you think that team could beat? Do you think like that group, like all the best dudes from all the previous Uni teams, do you think they could beat this team?
That's a pretty tough lineup. I would say that'd be a game.
Yeah,
your weak side though, your weak side is probably the side going up against Mbizo, because don't get me wrong, Mbizo can shut it down for large sections of the game, but when his head isn't in it, his head is not in it. And we saw that against Tijuana, where, you know, Jim pulled him and then he didn't play against Kotaro. So it's, you know, there's I don't know. I think you got a great lineup there. I'm surprised that no Aristigueta isn't in there, or
Connor Casey, Casper
Shiboko. Connor Casey,
You could put a bunch of dudes, but look, here's the thing, man. It's like, because people were asking me, like, why didn't you put Ray Gaddis in there? Well, if I put him in at fullback, you need another, like, fullback, really. Because that's the weakness. The Union have only had a couple, like two or three, like, serviceable left fullbacks ever. Like, Kai Wagner is so far and away the best fullback that they've ever had on either side. And so I just think the Union have had better center backs than outside backs. I mean, you could do something where you put Shane in over at right back and put Gaddis over at left back, and dropped like Carlos Valdez and just got with Trusty and McKenzie. I mean, Trusty's playing friggin' championship now. He's playing for Arsenal in the preseason. Yeah. But I think that, like, honestly, like, I think this is, like, crazy to say, honestly, man, but, like, in their primes or at their best, I think I would take Barnetta, Dochkal, and Ilsinho over Gajdog. Is that fucked up? Am I? Because I don't know. I like Gajdog, but just the way that they play, it's so direct, and he bangs in a bunch of penalties. It's just, I don't know. It's like,
I don't know, man. I think he's got a better nose for the goal than Barnetta. I mean, don't get me wrong, Shaquilo, you're right, in his prime, was one of the best players, you know, in the league. Yeah, I don't know. He was really good here. I don't know. Something about Gajdog though makes me excited. I think because, like, if he's on the pitch, the way that he moves, even when he's come back to, like, receive a ball. Like, he just makes smart plays. It isn't about him, like, finishing. He actually knows how to, like, play the game of soccer.
He's got really a good brain, man. He's got a really good brain for soccer.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I feel like, in the prime versus this team, that's a match, bro. You got, because you named some good players, but I don't know. I don't think it's a blowout.
I honestly, and again, like I said, I didn't want people to focus too much on the shape or whatever. It's more of like the collection of talent. But honestly, God, if you put these teams together on like a neutral field, I think the current team wins like 6 out of 10 or 7 out of 10 or maybe, or like, you know, 6 out of 10 with a draw in there or two draws and 5 wins or something. But I thought it was fascinating. Like, this is the type of hypothetical shit that I love to do. You know,
it's so much fun. Yeah,
this is what we talk about on Sports Talk Radio. Sports Talk Radio talked about the Union, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Versus
exactly.
Like Jalen Hurts. How many passes Jalen Hurts completed in July, you know? So
I got one for you. Carlos Ruiz or Daniel Gajdog?
You know, I didn't even mention Pescadito in the full friggin' story because he was here for like 2 seconds, but he was really good.
But he lit it up. He lit it up in them 2 seconds too. And I mean, and he's a stalwart of the league. He's been around forever, right?
Would you take? Let me ask you this: would you take Prime Latu and Pescadito or Carranza and Ua?
Oh no question. I'd take Fish and Latu.
Pescadito was good, man. I mean, he played MLS for a long time, and he scored goals for everybody, you know. So
and the key word there is prime. I mean, that 2011 season with Latu, where Latu just banging in goals like it wasn't.
I love that team, man. I mean, people are probably sick of hearing me talk about it on this podcast, but like that team was good, man. And they had
the 2011 team was good. It was poorly mismanaged, but it was a good team.
Well, I do wonder if we did a what if you and I ever do the book. Like, my biggest what if question would be, what if Peter Novak didn't roll out a five-man back line in the playoffs? Like, come out with something you've never played before. Stefani Migliorazzi playing sweeper or whatever that was, you know?
It was very random. It was very random. And, I mean, I don't understand why you're packing it in either. There was like no need for that. I don't know.
Play your game. You're at home, man. Playing the Houston Dynamo. You're not lining up in the Etihad against like you know, Guardiola's
City team.
What are you worried about? You know,
yeah. So, they were, you know, well, you know, Kalen Carr back then was lighting up the league too, so they're probably terrified of Kalen Carr with that rugby helmet on, bro. That had me shook for real.
They had Tally Hall. They had like Andre Hainault, I think, was on that team.
Bobby Boswell.
Those aren't guys that would be fun if I could dig up the rosters for the, let me see if I can do that real quick and then we'll end on that 2011 Houston Dynamo roster. You know who I think they had? Oh, here we go. Okay, they had Brad Davis.
Yeah, didn't they have Brian? Wasn't Brian Ching on the team still?
Brian Ching, Will Bruin,
that's right. Indiana guy. He was pretty good.
Yeah, they had Carlo Cosley. Adam Moffat, Danny Cruz was on the diamond.
Danny Cruz on the team. That's right. Yeah.
Corey Ash was their left back. Jeff Cameron.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Jermaine Taylor, the Jamaican guy.
Yeah.
Colin Clark, Javon Watson. Yeah.
Yeah, like those aren't guys that. I mean, you name some good names. I'm not putting up a 5-man back line against that team. I'm going to go all balls out against those guys.
All of these guys, if you and I played against them at Fairmount Park, would run fucking circles around us. Just so everybody's clear on that.
Everybody's aware of that.
I mean, yeah. Kreith's good. I played with Kreith for like 10 years now. He's got a mean left foot, but I think Hunter Freeman would shut us down, I think.
Hunter Freeman would probably just 2-foot slide tackle me and I'll be done for the rest of my career. Being home eating popsicles, watching him on TV.
Oh, God, man. You still playing? Where are you playing now?
You know what, Kev? I've been trying to play as much as possible. It's been real hard. My kid is balling now. Man. He's 7. He's playing for SWAG, this phenomenal program here to, you know, introduce soccer to kids in the inner city. And he made a select team. And, you know, those guys travel and do everything. And you know, it's a real gateway into, you know, possibly landing on an academy team or even getting onto, you know, a bigger club. So, like, I've been fully vested in his development now, which is very little time for me to play soccer elsewhere. But when it's
he likes it and he's enjoying it.
He's a baller, man. Yeah. I'm not trying to be biased because he's my kid, but like, he legit has the bug. You know, I'm not telling him to go outside knocking around. If I can't find him, he's out back kicking the ball around, which is fantastic. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, you got to root for something like that. And I'm going to foster that as much as possible. He did, however, the other day said that he wants to try out baseball, which I was like, I mean, all right, man. Like, you know, pick any other sport besides baseball. I can't sit there and watch little 7-year-olds.
I know. I love the Phils. I love Major League Baseball, but I'm like, if my girls get into like softball or something, I'm like, I don't know. It's a little dry.
It's a little dry. But no, but yeah, to answer your question, you know, when I do it, I got down to Penn Park, knocking around with whoever's playing pickup down there, but. There are no more leaks for me. I just don't have the time.
No, I'm with you, man. I remember you and I, like, it was the height of the pandemic. The pandemic just happened, and I was like texting you or something. I'm like, dude, I'm like dying. I need to just kick a ball. And this was when nobody knew anything about COVID. So we went down to Penn Treaty Park and we were just hoofing like
long balls,
40 yard diagonals back.
I remember that.
You know, because I'm like, I got the itch. I try to play the lunchtime pickup game at YSC on Fridays and get down there and fill in at YSC when I can. But yeah, man, it's just kids, man. Kids.
They will do it. But, you know, the life we chose, right?
So. It's all good, man. Hey, listen, I appreciate you coming back on, man. Coming back on again. It's good to hear that you're back down at Talon. Talon, Jesus.
Subaru Park.
I called it PPL the other day. I was like, Jesus Christ. Yeah.
It's always PPL to me, man. I've been calling it PPL forever. That's what I know it as. So
yeah, aging myself. Kreith Gabriel, everybody from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Follow him on X at SPRTSWTR. Sports writer. Good to have you, man. Yeah, awesome.
We'll do it. Appreciate you, Kev. Thanks, man. Have a good one.